Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut.
Finally beautiful.
Finally gorgeous. And today, I don't know if you feel it's a little cooler in the studio today. The AC got fixed today, so I'm in business over here at Perry Avenue Bar and Grill. I'm Mike DePalma. To my left, behind the glass, we got Tony D, our producer, back in.
Yeah.
Guy's traveling the world. He plays softball. Guy, you got a lot on your plate, my dude.
Boy. I'll be sleeping by 10 o'clock.
You ain't making it. We are not going into bonus time tonight. We got Neil Lynch is going to be joining us from the Hoboken studio in a minute whenever he gets his technical issues taken care of. I don't know. That dude's got to pay his cell phone bill because there's a little bit of trouble calling in from the Hoboken studios. But, Tony, I'm almost glad you weren't here last week because you are the music guru on our show. And so Neil and I went through our top 10 most embarrassing likes, like musical likes.
Yep.
He had someone that I forgot all about. He had that tattoo song. Remember those two girls? And I didn't remember them. And he said they were sisters. And then I clicked on them and watched the video. And these girls were like making out. I'm like, I hope they were two Russian girls. They're not sisters, thank God, because Neil would have been on a list somewhere. Because he was talking about how great the video was, and they were sisters. And I look at it, and these girls are making out. They're like 16-year-old girls making out. And they were like banned in their country or something. He had a tattoo on there. I had Bruno Mars. I can't get enough of Bruno Mars.
You know what? He's got some couple tracks out there.
Everything is good. Yeah. Everything that dude touches is gold.
That new one he's got out, every 2 seconds he's going, ugh. That's like, come on.
Look, he could do no wrong in my opinion. I had Pure Moves. You ever hear those Pure Moves CDs from back in the 90s?
No.
Oh, it was just like, oh, I can't even explain them. I'm gonna buy copies of them. I don't even know they're out on CD. They were so great. I had Disney songs. I like all like 90s Disney music. You know what I mean? I like Aladdin, Lion King, all that. You don't
Lion
like
King
that?
Is a good, Lion King, yeah. I can't hate it.
I even Phil Collins did that the Tarzan movie. Mm-hmm. That was good. Those are heart pulling songs.
Yeah, definitely not something I'd admit though. That
I know, and that's what I'm saying. So we got cut off. It's actually, I think the FCC got on us because we're in the middle of our list in bonus time. We had about 15 minutes left, and I asked Neil, you know, typically we have a couple cocktails here in the studio. What of it? We're a couple of gentlemen. We could have a cocktail like a gentleman and be, you know. So I said, I don't even know what I was drinking last week. I said, you drinking anything? And right as he was about to give his answer, they cut us off. So maybe it's not good, but we're going to test it out because this week, and Neil is joining us now from Hoboken. He is missing out on a new cocktail. Typically in the summer, we go bourbon and lemonade in studio. That's my thing.
Oh, yeah.
Bourbon and lemonade is the best. But this just came from Tony D's idea. We had some of this Fireball cinnamon whiskey, which is fantastic. Everybody takes the shots. We're at the bar. Like, now that's the new Jägermeister.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody. Oh, fire. Yeah, exactly. Everybody's got to get this cinnamon. So we mixed it up with a little Diet Dr. Pepper. Neil, you are missing out, brother. Are you with us, Neil?
Yeah, I'm here. By the grace of God, I'm on the friggin' line right now.
Do you have a cocktail in front of you?
I have HGO, my man. I'm still recovering from the weekend. It was brutal.
It's Wednesday, Neil.
So your webcam doesn't work and
I'm 32.
Cell phone. Your webcam doesn't work and your cell phone's broken?
Yeah, dude. Nothing is working right now. My body, my electronics, it's all downhill.
We got to invest some money in the Hoboken studio, I think, Neil, because over here in Perry Avenue, we're rocking and rolling.
On point. I was here 20 minutes early, ready to go.
Oh, yeah. We had a pre-show meeting. But, Neil, what I want to do before we get into this week's show, because we got cut off, we have to finish our top 10 last week because we got a lot of great feedback on that. I loved it. I'll tell you, my father was mad. He got cut off, and I didn't even tell you this, Neil. So he texts me. He goes, well, what was your number one? I was like, you got to tune in next week. He goes, mine would have been Barry Manilow. So, I mean, my dad is like an old school, like, you know, like Frankie Valli and that. I could see my dad not being able to tell his buddies growing up that he was a big Barry Manilow fan. I can see that. So I'm with him on that. So I believe we left off. You were on number two, Neil. We're not going to spend a ton of time on him. Who is your number two most regrettable like in the music industry?
Well, if you remember, I was given a very extended prelude to it, but I'll get right into the nitty-gritty this time. I don't know the name of the song, but it was from the quote-unquote, original Spider-Man, the 2002 movie starring Kirsten Dunst. It's the Nickelback song from the Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, that's horrible. I don't know that song. And again, he made fun of me, Tone. I've never seen any of the Spider-Man movies. He said that's one of his go-to flicks.
Come on.
That might be more embarrassing than the Nickelback song.
I think I've only seen one or two. How many are they going to make? Is
I don't
new
know.
One coming out now?
I mean, the guy's Spider-Man. But so here's my thing about that, Neo. We talked. It might have been before you joined the show. I don't know if you remember. There was a Thanksgiving game. I believe it was 2 years ago. They always had a Thanksgiving game in Detroit, and Nickelback was going to perform at halftime. They always have an act performing at halftime. And the people of Detroit, and this is why I love it. I've never been to Detroit. Probably I'll never be in Detroit. Why am I ever going to be out there? But they had a petition. They got like 30,000 signatures to say we don't want Nickelback in our building because they're so bad.
I don't blame them.
They got too much pride in Detroit, and there's not a lot to be proud of in Detroit to have Nickelback. And you have them as your number two. That is pretty embarrassing, Neil. But I like that you're sticking to your guns. I like that about you.
Yeah, the song is called Hero. And, you know, I pretty much dig any song that champions people that, you know, you look up to, legends, icons, what have you. So, yeah, I mean, and I was a big fan of Spider-Man. It was a movie that moved me. And you can see that it's so popular that they keep making, churning them out. But, you know, give it a listen another time. They don't play it a lot these days. But give it a listen and just tell me, you know, you don't fall in love with it.
I will. I'm going to listen to it immediately after the show. And hopefully next week we'll open the show with it. Now we get to our number ones, Neil. And I talked to you. And it actually, it's almost better that we didn't get to it because on, like, and Tony wasn't here. So he had no idea what we were discussing. He didn't even know what the top 10 was. But he got into a little beef with one of our friends from across the pond, one of our biggest diehard fans of the show, Luke, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Moritz or something like that. Big basketball fan, big Nets fan from Australia. And Tony had posted something about Kanye West. So you could say, you know, you might hate him, but you got to admit the guy's a genius. And the way he rolled out his new album, he was like on buildings across
Have
the
you
country.
Seen that?
Yeah, yeah, I saw the thing you posted.
Awesome.
I saw a Saturday Night Live performance. It was pretty awful, but
yeah, I mean,
but that being said, Kanye West is my number one. And Tony, we discussed it before the show, and Tony's like, I don't know that that's that embarrassing, but it kind of is. You don't know. I mean, that guy is unlikable as a human being.
Yeah,
it, so,
absolutely.
But I find myself. I mean, that song, the douchebag song, whatever that is, raise it, have a toast. That's a fantastic song. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. And there's so many of his songs that I like. I can't help it. I like it. But I'm not going to go out and tell somebody I just met, oh, hey, you're rushing out to get the new Ye CD. I mean, what are your thoughts about Kanye West, Neil? Am I off base here? Should I not be embarrassed?
No, I mean, I with every fiber of my body, I don't want to like that character. And, you know, other than his songs, it's just like I can't see myself hanging out with him. You know, and it's ridiculous that someone of that ilk and that makeup can make me feel so good about myself and make me love life. You know, the fact that he's dating Kim Kardashian and just comes up with these ridiculous quotes and costumes and his behavior, it's just like everything that I loathe about humanity except for his song.
Yeah, so it isn't, but it is. It's like you feel like that girl who, like, dates the jerk guy who, like, treats her, like, horribly, and you're like, why is this guy? That's what I feel like. Like, how could I possibly bring myself to like this guy? But I'll tell you right now, I'm sure there's going to be a couple catchy tunes on that. The two that I heard have not been great, but...
You don't like the one that he put out?
I just think that maybe the lyrics are all right, but the way he, like, yells, it's like this,
thing
like,
is,
she's, like, primal screams during it.
Yeah,
like, what are you doing, dude?
The thing is, too, I mean, that's just, like, audio, so that's just him.
But that's what he did he sang it on SNL, and it was awesome.
Oh, yeah, see, that's just, I mean, I think it... On SNL, I don't think that would be good.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, he's such a good producer that I think when you hear it on his CD, it's going to be tight and crisp.
Plus,
and all.
When he did that, like, he broadcast that day like 20 different places, in the middle of Brooklyn. It was out there. Was another video outside of Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
So, like, people were walking out of the baseball
game.
It
was like eight different countries.
Yeah,
or something like
I mean,
that.
To me, I thought it's a genius move. I mean,
yeah. It was a good marketing move.
Yeah.
It's the guy couldn't make himself more unlikable, and he's one of the biggest stars in all the movies. So
seeing Kim Kardashian, it's even worse.
It's even worse. The guy couldn't. I mean, you couldn't ask for a worse like PR move than to have a baby with Kim Kardashian. I mean, the hump was loved in Brooklyn. I mean, when we were in New Jersey, he was like one of the every Net fan loved him, and then he gets booed everywhere he goes just because he married her. All right, Neil, who's your number one? Then we'll get to the show.
It's higher. By Creed.
Oh.
That's a good one.
Well, this will tie into our top 10 this week. Yeah, I'll tell you, there was a stretch there in the late 90s where Creed was everywhere. If you were like, when that summer, when that came out, and you were just like at a pool or at the beach, somebody was blaring that CD. And I'll admit, yeah. I liked it a little bit when it first came out, but that guy, I wouldn't listen to a Creed song if it came out right now.
Well, I mean, you know, knowing what I know now, it's kind of taken a little bit of the luster and glitz and glamour off of it, you know. It's not as appealing, but if it comes on and I'm alone in a room and no one's around that can't hear me, I'll sing along, I'll chirp along.
Rock out to it. I will tell you a quick Scott Stapp. That's the guy's name, right?
Yeah.
Scott Stapp?
Yeah.
I went to the All-Star game with my former co-host, O, when they were at Yankee Stadium a few years back. And, of course, with O, you always get fantastic seats. You're like in the second row behind the third base dugout. And right behind us was sitting Scott Stapp. We had better seats than Scott Stapp. And three rows behind him was Bobby Bonilla. So we had better seats than Scott Stapp and Bobby Bonilla. He's a little dude. He's just a little bit of a thing.
Yeah, and I remember he challenged, if you remember on my list, and he might have been on your list, but he challenged Fred Durst to a boxing match. Yeah. And I think everyone was pumped about that.
Yeah, that would have been an ugly fight. That would have been a girl fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Both of those phony tough guys. All right, well, let's get into the show, Neil, after we get past that. We're watching right now in the studio. We got the Mets-Yankees game on. Game 3 of the Subway Series. This year, they're switching it up a little bit. They're going to a little 2-2 series back-to-back. But let's just get into the more – I mean, obviously, the last two games have been ridiculously exciting. But has the Subway Series, regular season Subway Series, completely lost its luster at this point, Neil?
I mean, going into this, and Marlon Byrd just went yard. Going into the series, I wasn't expecting much. And even though the Yankees supposedly are, you know, running a JV squad out there, they're playing above their heads, they're punching above their weight, and they're overachieving like nuts. And so I was expecting the Mets to possibly get swept. But now that they're in Yankee Stadium, they've won the first two, they're up big in the third. I'm getting kind of excited. I know the attendance is down, and a lot of people were worried about that. But it's catching my eye, and I'm tuning in, and I'm rooting for them. So, you know, I think it's something that going in, a lot of people were not expecting much of. But now that you see what's going on, maybe this is something that the turning point for the Mets, and maybe a wake up call for the Yankees.
Yeah, somebody had tweeted Tony and I about whether this could be a start of a nice little run for the Mets and all. I think that might be a little overboard, but it just as a side, I mean, the home run that Marlon Byrd just hit just shows you what a joke Yankee Stadium is. And there was a ball up in his eyes, there's a pop up the other way that hit off the top of the fence and went out. That's like playing at Brian McMahon High School. I mean, that ball shouldn't be out of any major league ballpark. But that being said, the rivalry at this point in the Subway Series is clearly extremely one-sided, because the Yankees players and fans are not into it. The Met fans are into it in the fact that we're winning, because it's all we got right now is Met fans. And you could see even the players. I mean, you look at how fired up Daniel Murphy and David Wright were last night. And basically, they're just a two-man wrecking crew on offense. It's all they got in the last two games. They're the ones that have gotten everything done. But it's clearly a one-side rivalry. What I think they need to do, and I remember being really excited in the late 90s when interleague play started and the hype around it. And there's been some great regular season games between these two teams. You could look back at the Matt Franco hit off of Manny Rivera back in like the late 90s. There was obviously Luis Castillo dropping the pop-up. The Yankee fans will all remember. I remember being at O'Neill's actually watching that game live. It was crazy. But I think what they need to do is adopt something like the NFL has, or like they do with every other team. They shouldn't play the Yankees every year just because they're rivals. And I know, like, Major League Baseball is trying to force this rivalry. But it's really not a Mets-Yankees rivalry, because they never played each other. It's not like, you know, Knicks and Nets or something like that are in the same conference. So I think it needs to go back to just when it comes around and they're playing the rest of the American League East, they play the Yankees. I think that'll add at least a little bit more luster to it. Instead of playing every single season, A, it's unfair to the Mets that they always have to play, you know, one of the perennial best teams in baseball when the rest of the teams are in division don't have to. But B, just they would add something to it if they only played them every 3 years as opposed to every year. What do you think about that?
I disagree. I mean, you know, I don't think it's the Olympics. I don't think it's – I mean, you get a whole year in between a series. I mean, you know, for me, I look forward to it. I think it's an awkward time. The timing on this series was awkward because when I, you know, I, as you know, I partake in the Jersey Shore. I usually get a shore house with a bunch of, like, boatloads of other people so I can afford it. And part of the charm and beauty of being down there, for me at least, was when the games would take place over the weekend. And, you know, no matter where we were in the standings, you know, it was always fun to be down there and getting rowdy and watching the game at the bar during the day or at a barbecue. And you have that kind of that antagonistic, you know, rivalry type feel to the setting. Now it's kind of like, well, it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's just during the week, I think it loses some steam. And you don't have as many people going out because they're recovering from the Memorial Day weekend, or they're trying to save up for the weekend. So for me, I think it's fine to do it every year. I just think they need to time it better.
Yeah, just I mean, if you are going to have it, to start it on Memorial Day night is crazy. To make it start on a Monday night, I mean, even if it was a day game, it'd be something, you know, you could have on the radio while you're outside barbecuing or something like that. But I mean, by the end of the Memorial Day weekend, 7 o'clock at night, most people are pretty drained, like you said. It was a very weird thing to start out as. But I don't know. I guess we'll agree to disagree. I just think they shouldn't over – like they're forcing this rivalry. Just interleague play exists. You're going to wind up playing every team every – you know, as the schedule permits. Or, you know, you kind of travel around the league. And one year you play, you know, the AL Central. One year you play the AL East. And that's when you play the Yankees, in my opinion. But I understand where you're coming from. It's pretty exciting. But speaking of exciting stuff, especially in the New York area, I mean, you know, being a big-time member of this show, we like to break down hockey, Neil. I mean, and you consider yourself, I mean, as knowledgeable a sports fan as I know on this planet. So, obviously, story is Torts gets fired today. So, you know, he's a guy I don't really like anyway. I don't care about his rah-rah, like, getting the player's face and all that stuff, but I think he's just downright rude to other people on Earth. Like, I understand sometimes when reporters, you know, have it coming to them and they ask a really stupid question or something like that. But this guy's just rude in, like, every press conference. He thinks he's Bill Belichick, except he doesn't have any rings. You know what I mean? Like, I have no problem with him firing. I mean, like we talked about when Cowboy co-hosted the show with me, I mean, this is a team that was predicted to win the Stanley Cup. They were the favorite before the season to win the Stanley Cup, barely made the playoffs, and then get bounced quickly in the second round there. Good riddance. Get going with them. I mean, you don't have any problem with that firing, do you?
I don't, and, you know, a lot of people might disagree with that, but the thing is, there's a certain, I don't know how you say it, but there's a kind of a pendulum effect or a spectrum, there's a ratio, right? You're willing to give this much to get this much, right? So you're willing to give them a little bit of leniency on the abusive nature of his coaching strategy and style because, you know, all right, he's going to get you W's, he's going to get you trophies, but at some point, you know, there's a boiling point, and I don't think that the players or the management or the organization can really put up with it if you're not gonna win trophy after trophy after trophy. If you know, Belichick wins 3 Super Bowls, gets another 2, so I think you know they don't mind that he's just an absolute you know, snooze fest in press conferences. But when it comes to Torts, it's like he is as extreme as you can get. In terms of attitude, but yet his output, you know, I think he has like 410 wins in 850 games, you know, like a 541 winning percentage. So, and he's less than 500 in the playoffs. So it's you know, if he pulls, and I make the analogy to Tom Coughlin. Sorry to hoggle the airspace here, but. I make the analogy to Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin was known as a dictator, right? He's a ruthless guy. He's overbearing. He's mean. He's not very friendly. And, you know, I think there came a point in his tenure with the Giants where the organization, someone in management came to him and said, yo, dude, unless you start, you know, winning some Super Bowls, you can't keep up this management style. You have to give a little bit. You have to trust in your players. You have to show – that you're willing to bend. And I think he did that before the 2006 or 2007 season, and you saw the results, 2 Super Bowls in 4 or 5 years. So I think maybe someone approached Torts about that, and he's just like, I'm going to do what I want to do, and I don't care what you have to say. And they were like, all right, peace out.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's got the best goalie in hockey, and like you said, he doesn't win in the playoffs. So then, you know, what gives there? I mean, what's he adding to this team? Were they not going to make the playoffs if he wasn't the coach? So, you know, screw him. And to go to kind of like, you know, reiterate your point, you know, Dick Vermeil talks about it all the time. When he went to the Super Bowl with the Eagles there in the early 80s, he said, you know, his coaching style and that was so intense that he didn't let his players breathe, and he felt like they played tight in that Super Bowl. And then when he finally, you know, he retired and came out of retirement and took the greatest show on turf to the Super Bowl, he said he learned from his past ways and changed it up and let these guys have some fun and enjoy the moment. And you look at the results. And I think that, you know, obviously you saw what Coughlin did, changing his ways. And that's not like it's not like he's not being true to himself. It's being a realistic person. You got to change with the times. You got to change with your personnel. You got to change with the type of people. I mean, people change generation to generation, and Torch is just stuck in his ways and it wasn't working. So good riddance. But to stick with the hockey, I got some trivia for you, Neil. You ready for hockey
all
trivia?
Right. This segment is called Let's Embarrass Neil. That's what the segment's called.
I will tell you this. I personally couldn't answer either one of these questions. But I will also tell you that they should be extremely easy. If my point is, Ben, since we started this show, hockey's not a major sport. Now, you and I are very big sports fans, are we not? I mean, we have a very successful podcast here. We got our website. We watch sports all the time, follow it. We would consider ourselves big-time sports fans. So these questions should be super, super easy. And maybe they'll be really easy for you, Neil. For me, I couldn't answer either one of them. There are 5 teams left in the playoffs right now for the NHL Stanley Cup. Name the 5 teams that are left in the playoffs.
Oh, for real? The Detroit Red Wings, Chicago Blackhawks, the Boston Bruins, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Ottawa Senators.
Cool. I thought the Kings were playing the winner of the Detroit-Chicago series. Is that wrong?
Well, you said name 5.
Well, there's only 5 left. The Kings won that series, didn't they?
No, so it's so there should be 6, right? Or no?
Well, there's going to be 4 after Game 7 of the Red Wings-Blackhawks series. I can't even answer it, and I haven't asked the question. What do we got, Neil? I thought the Kings beat the San Jose Sharks.
They did. Yeah.
Right. So that would mean there's going to. What did I?
They're going to play the winner of the Blackhawks Red Wings series.
Well, yeah. So that would make 6. You said name 5.
Yeah. There's only 5 teams left. The Kings have already.
I didn't say the Kings. It said Blackhawks Red Wings. Blackhawks Red Wings.
Now.
Penguins. Oh, the Penguins won, huh? Oh, okay. That makes sense.
You were going to do. To be honest with you, I would have had the Penguins Bruins. I couldn't have told you who was coming out of the West. I had no idea. My second question, and this one will be tough. You got to give me first name and last name. I don't want to hear just last name. Name one player in each one of those teams.
On the Penguins, Sidney Crosby.
There you go. Ding ding.
On the Kings, you have Jonathan Quick, who's the goalie.
Yeah, I just the only guy I knew on the Kings.
On the Bruins, you have Brad Marchand.
I knew Chara, but I thought you were going to go with that. I don't know how to pronounce his first name.
Zdeněk Chara, yeah, that's his name. And then
you get to the Red Wings, Blackhawks.
Blackhawks, you have... Oh, man. I know this, too. I remember their goalie, and I remember they have a winger or something like that. I'm drawing a blank.
You got nothing. He did better than I did, though. I mean, I would have had Quick. I would have had Crosby. I would have said Char, but I couldn't have got his first name. It just shows you. I mean, you were talking about getting down to the conference finals. And we couldn't even name players on the teams, let alone the teams. I couldn't even name the teams. That's our hockey trivia. Nobody breaks down sports like the Tri-State Sports guys, Neil.
Yeah, I feel bad about it. I mean, but I feel like there's a certain there's a resurgence. I mean, this is the first game seven between the Blackhawks and the Red Wings since like the '60s, and those guys are bitter rivals. So I feel like, you know, there's a little more interest around that. Not so much from the Northeast area, but more in the Midwest. I think you talk to a lot of people in the Midwest, they'll be like all over that. You know, and I've never really followed anyone from the Western Conference, to be honest. So it's kind of hard to keep up with that over there. But, you know, we focus on the Rangers, the Islanders, and the Devils out here. You know, I could tell you a lot more about those three teams. But, yeah, it's lost its popularity. But you look at the league as a whole, and they've gone through so many strikes and lockouts. And, you know, you wonder how much they can keep going with that and still maintain a decent level of popularity. There's no arguing that the organization, the league, is trailing every other league by, you know, leaps and bounds. But I feel that there's a little resurgence. You know, I think after once you get past this Blackhawks Red Wings series, the Bruins Penguins series might be good. But I don't know that, you know, that anyone's gonna be watching the finals.
Yeah, you know, and we had JT on way back when, and he was our big hockey guy, big Rangers fan, and he actually brought up the point, and I agreed with him when he said it, that the shortened season would make for a more exciting season, and that the NHL should really consider moving their season to where it's not competing with everyone, you know what I mean, where they could almost be a stand, you know, so they could, why can't they play during the summer? I mean, it's all indoors. Who the hell cares if it's hockey in the summer when, you know, you're in the middle of the dog days or something like that, and have it finish, so, like have the Stanley Cup basically start around the All-Star break of baseball, where those couple, you know, they would have the center stage when there's, you know, there's obviously that one day where there's no major sport playing, the day after the All-Star game, and maybe that would be, you know, when you're planning the middle of the Stanley Cup, something like that. I do think, and the ratings show that the ratings did go up a little bit this year, and I think the shortened season had something to do with that because every game meant so much, and, you know, the Rangers got off to that awful start, and it was almost impossible for them to dig their way out of it because of the shortened season. So maybe, I mean, it's not something these teams are going to agree to because obviously it's a huge loss of revenue. But it's something to think about. They could pile, you know, pack this season into a shorter time frame, and try to leverage whatever they can there, to excitement wise.
Yeah, and I think they just need to embrace this whole new campaign. I mentioned it before. I don't know if you saw, but like the "Let's Get Weird" mantra. Like, just start doing gimmicky, weird stuff. Because I think hockey fans don't really there's a new generation of hockey fans that they appreciate tradition and, you know, what comes along with that, but they're willing to, like, get a little nuts and get a little, off the beaten path. So I think that if any league is going to try something new and different, then it should be the NHL, and why not? Because you have nothing to lose, really.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're basically pitching another Will Ferrell movie, to be honest, which I like.
Yeah.
Let Will Ferrell come in and save the NHL. I like that, Neil. But let's get over to baseball, an actual major sport. And we're not going to talk too much about baseball today, but I want to talk a little bit about Miguel Cabrera. I mean, this guy wins a Triple Crown last year and is amazingly putting up better numbers this year. The guy's hitting .390. He's on pace for 200 RBIs, and that's not like on pace after 1 week. They're 50 games into the season, and this guy is on pace for 50 home runs, 200 RBIs, and betting .380. It's amazing the numbers this guy puts up, and it amazes me that, you know, unless you're a baseball fan, the average just Joe off the street, I bet you my wife doesn't know who Miguel Cabrera is. Like, how does a guy like Miguel Cabrera, and I know he had his problems there with the DUI a few years back and all that, and I know there's always issues with possibly the language barrier, but how is he not a much, much bigger star? When you see, it's not just like baseball players can't be stars. You see Joe Mauer in Head and Shoulders commercials. You see Derek Jeter everywhere. There's other stars in baseball that are, I mean, Justin Verlander's in different ads and all those people.
You should put him in like whiskey commercials.
Why can't he be in a Boos commercial or something? Get him in some Vegas ads or something. I mean, why isn't this guy a bigger star? Is it maybe, it could come, I mean, go ahead, answer the question, and then I'll come up with maybe another theory.
I mean, I was thinking about this for a long time, and it could be just a personal decision. You know, it really could just be he's like, you know what? I think I make enough money playing baseball. I don't need all this other extraneous stuff. I just love the game of baseball, and I just want to hit the lights, the seams and stitches off the ball. You know, to me, I feel like that's really the only thing that I can think of is that.
So speak English?
Either.
Speak
well,
some.
The fact that he can't speak English is, you know, is part of it, but I think you have plenty. I mean, Jose Reyes was on the cover of MLB, like, whatever year that was. Like, there are plenty of guys who can't speak English who are doing ads, you know, like nuts. So it's not that. And it's, you know, he's not the most attractive dude in the world, but there are uglier dudes doing better, more stuff. So I honestly think it's just a personal decision on his part to be like, you know what, I just want to focus on baseball. And apparently it's paying off in spades because he's crushing the ball.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right. I mean, he's got a little bit of Manny Ramirez in him that way, I guess, where he's just like a savant when it comes to hitting, and he, you know, he works hard at his craft and all that. But, you know, I look at a guy, even like Big Poppy is a huge celebrity. Every sports fan knows Big Poppy, and he's been great, but he's never been the kind of player that Miguel Cabrera is. I mean, this guy's a once-in-a-generation player. I mean, he's surpassing, like, you know, Albert Pujols as the player of this generation, taking over the torch from, like, Barry Bonds and Alex Rodriguez. And so I almost want to – I'm going to transition – this will help transition into our next topic, which will be basketball, but – I think that it doesn't even have to be him to consciously go out and make himself a star and go out and take endorsement deals. This day and age, basically, in my opinion, ESPN dictates who the stars are, what the stories are, what the big stories are. We talked about it with, you know, they have the power and the monopoly over the sports market right now to make any story. I mean, as big of a story as Tim Tebow would have been anyway, ESPN blew it up into what it was and made, you know, it constant coverage, opening SportsCenter with how he did in OTAs and all that kind of stuff. And they have the ability to do whatever they want and create any story. I mean, they made Michael Jordan's 50th birthday sound like a guy had just thrown back-to-back no-hitters. I mean, it was a guy who's been retired for 10 years, turning 50, and it was all you heard about for a week. And they have the ability to do that. And it's like, why won't ESPN just say, you know what, we will take it upon ourselves to make Miguel Cabrera a star? Do you think that ESPN, that I think that they completely control, and that'll segue into our next thing, but I think they completely control what becomes a big story and a not big story in sports today.
Well, I mean, if you remember back to last year when he was chasing the Triple Crown and eventually won it, like there was a ton of coverage around that. And I think that, you know, it could have been a situation where they reach out to him, to his agent, his reps, and they're like, we want to do this around you. And they're like, no, don't. You know, I don't know. I mean, it is very peculiar, and it's weird, and I understand where he's coming from, but I think it might be a situation where he's just like, you know, I'm just going to do my thing. You know, and maybe it's just, you know, I suppose there's someone out there who has a lot more expertise in training and marketing and advertising that can you know, he's not an outspoken guy. He doesn't make ridiculous comments. He doesn't have a ridiculous post-home run bat flip or dance or celebration. There's just nothing flashy about the guy. He just mauls. So it's
He was 20 years old. But you know what? You talk about his run at the Triple Crown, and it got coverage. It should have gotten – I mean, that's a huge story. It's the first time it happened since the 60s. And instead, ESPN, in my opinion – just all they want to talk about was the Trout and Harper story about these two rookies putting up historical numbers and all that. And to be honest, Bryce Harper didn't put up ridiculous numbers last year. The guy had like 260 with 19 home runs. And it was like all I saw on Baseball Tonight was them just doing story after story about Mike Trout and Bryce Harper. And so I kind of disagree with you there. I mean, they covered it because it was a big deal. They should have been cutting into every at bat. They should have been. It should have been that type of story, and it wasn't. But I'm going to use that to kind of transition over to the NBA. And you look at what the San Antonio Spurs have done. Team that, you know, yeah. Put a little bit more Dr. Pepper in there. You get to the bottom of this drink, Neil. Both of us.
Wow.
We're getting to the bottom of this first whatever it is, Fireball and Dr. Pepper, and woofah. That's a rough bottom. We got to add a little bit more Dr. Pepper to that to take the edge off. But look at the San Antonio Spurs. They're 12-2 in this playoff run, and all people talk about is the NBA doesn't want that because they're a boring team. What makes the San Antonio Spurs a boring team? Explain to me how they're a boring team. They have superstars. They have Tony Parker, who's electric. It's not just like, you know, it's just boring offense. This guy drives to the basket. Explain to me why they're a boring team. And I think it is because ESPN tells us they're a boring team. Because explain to me how the San Antonio Spurs are boring.
I mean, I don't think we have enough time.
Give me 2 minutes dissertation on how they're boring and tell me what teams are so exciting. Go ahead.
First of all, like, the personalities on the team, not magnetic, not electric, not outspoken. I mean, compare them to the other teams you look at. Just look at them versus the Miami Heat. You have LeBron, who's been a source of contention for a lot of people because of his super abilities, but then also his flaws. You look at Dwayne Wade, who's very expressive on the court, as is Chris Bosh. They have freaking Birdman with the tattoos and a mohawk. And the town of Miami itself and the way that they respond, that blonde chick giving the middle finger to Joakim Noah as he's coming off the court, and she apparently murdered her husband. Like, it's just they have all these storylines going for them. And then you look at the Spurs, and it's like they're good.
It's almost like they don't really play like OKC or like the Heat. They don't play above the rim a lot. You don't got a lot of ridiculous dunks. You don't got a lot of fast break play. I mean, it's just, but they're on point. You know,
here's how I'm gonna combat that a little bit. Everything you're mentioning, Neil, is off the court stuff. And I don't think that we're that dumb to that. That's the only thing that we care about is the fact that Dwayne Wade wears capri pants and Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook wear glasses with no lenses on. So, to me, that's ridiculous. And the idea that, like, the Heat are such an exciting team to watch because, you know, twice a game LeBron has a great dunk, to me is ridiculous because when you really watch the Heat, all they do is drive the hoop, get fouled, and shoot foul shots. That's all they do. So if you really think exciting basketball is watching LeBron James and Dwayne Wade shoot foul shots, then God bless you. Then I guess I don't know what exciting basketball is. I'd rather see a good, crisp game of basketball making nice plays, and you look at passes that Tony Parker could make and these type of things.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy is a superstar. Why? I mean, that guy was married to a famous actress. It's not like he doesn't have a big personality off the court.
Yeah.
So why isn't that something? And then you look at the Knicks. I'm going to bring up the Knicks as a team that everybody's like, they're such an exciting team. They're such an exciting team. All they do is shoot.
Yeah, they're not. I don't think they're.
If you think exciting basketball is watching LeBron James shoot foul shots and the Knicks settle for jumpers all day, which is all they do, how is that exciting? It's because ESPN tells us that's exciting. And they could market that, whatever, because they could market superstars. I mean, to me, I just don't understand it. I never understood it. This is not the Detroit. They're not the Detroit Pistons. Where of, you know, the early 2000s, where that was a boring team to watch, where they're playing, you know, 78, 72 games. The Spurs do play great defense, but they could score, too. And they got shooters.
Yeah,
they got guys that can drive to the hoop. They got
You take a look at the Detroit Pistons of the late 80s and early 90s, and why do people like them? The Bad Boys, right? The personalities that they put on the court, the style of play that they had. The Spurs don't have that. They don't have, you look at the Bulls of the 90s. You know, you look at the teams that people gravitate towards and that they remember, the San Antonio Spurs will not go down in history and will not be remembered. In my mind, they're the equivalent of the early 1980s New York Islanders. It's like, is anyone going to really remember them outside of the actual Spurs fans, which they're not the ton of Spurs fans out there?
There's no Spurs fans out there. I agree with that. It's because of ESPN telling us it's not a big deal. And comparing them to the Islanders, I mean, it's not a major sport. I mean, maybe there's some LA Galaxy franchise back in the 90s, too, that were really good at soccer. But who cares about soccer? Nobody cares about hockey. This is NBA basketball, a team that's been great and has been exciting to watch. I don't understand how their style of basketball is not exciting to watch. You want to talk about they don't have great personalities? Well, then now we're just into reality television, and we just care about, you know, what they wear to the arena and all that stuff. It just seems crazy to me.
And then
same people on ESPN who will manufacture these stories and tell us we're supposed to like these guys because they have this edge and all of this stuff will be the same people that will talk about how Carmelo Anthony is selfish and can't win. So, you know, I just don't understand it.
it's a combination of all the stuff we're mentioning. That's the thing. That's why I said you have enough time, because it's you take all the different elements and you look at all the formulas that you know, and ESPN is definitely a major factor in that. But it's like, it's not like they don't cover the games and they're just completely excluding highlights and being exclusionary. And, you know, SCP mentioned this on his show. It's like, we have the numbers. We have the research. We look at the viewership when we extensively cover the Spurs, and it just dramatically drops because for one reason or another, or for multiple reasons, it just doesn't add up. It's not hitting a chord with America. And I can see why, and that's why I was so against them making it to the finals again, because it's like, it just seems like they're not robots per se, but it's like they're hard to root for, and even in the tight games, you just feel yourselves rooting against them. And I can't tell why, and they're not even like a good villain to root against. You know, every villain, you know, the best movie villains out there, they have that certain, like, panache, and the Spurs do not have that.
I mean, I could not disagree with you more. How could you root against the San Antonio Spurs? Tone, be the tiebreaker here. Are they the, I mean, who is crazier, me for saying that they play exciting basketball? It probably is me, because I'm clearly in the minority.
I mean,
so who's if you had to choose a side, they're the villain because they're cookie cutter?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they play exciting basketball. I think they're boring, but the precision that they play with is on point. I mean, it's like they, you know, they're throwing bounce passes between people's legs. They're, you know, they're Tony Parker's running around picks. I mean, they don't really make too many mistakes. They just don't have that swagger about them that you want to, you know.
If you remember, we did top 10 point guards when O was still on the show.
Yeah.
O didn't even have Tony Parker on his top 10. I had him at number 3.
Oh,
it just shows you a little bit about, I mean, knowing about basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, if you start in a franchise right now for the next 5 years, he's got to be there right with Chris Paul and all of them. That's how good he is.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, it sounds like you're agreeing with Neil. Maybe you got to jump over to the Hoboken studio, and I'll just hold down the fort here because I can't.
Well, I'll tell you what, if they get in the finals, I will root for them. All right, they're in the finals.
Well, they're in the finals. Even if they're playing the Pacers?
No. No.
All right, well, let's get to that other series, Neil. I mean, San Antonio is going to have a long wait, because at least this series is at least going to 6, and it's got the makings of a 7-game series out east here. Are you surprised at the fact that this series is 2-2 right now? I'll be honest, and I've been a big Pacers fan. I've been saying they're the second best team in the East. I thought after they lost game one the way they lost, it was going to be a sweep. I thought for sure, this is going to be a sweep. Now, this was their shot, and they have come back, and obviously they grabbed game two. They get beat up in game three, and then they come out and played a great game. They were down late in the fourth quarter, like 5 minutes left. They're down 3 or 4 points,
yep.
And they just out, you know, precision play the Miami Heat, and the Miami Heat imploded with turnovers and fouling out. I mean, what do you mean? Are you surprised that it's 2-2 right now, Neil? I'm shocked.
I'm actually surprised that the Pacers are not up 3-1. I mean, I feel like they match up well with the Heat, and I think they have. There's a game plan there, and you kind of saw it in game one. You saw it in game four, where it's like you need to absolutely just pound the ball inside to Hibbert. And as soon as they try and compensate and get big, you have guys like Stevenson and George and Hill on the outside just nailing buckets. And that's the key, right? Because if you looked at a lot of the game four down the stretch, it was, you know, Stevenson making a ridiculous three in the corner with Wade like coming over and really fouling him and coming up clutch and playing physical. And I've said this going back to last year. Whenever you play the Heat, you know, just get physical. And I know that you're going to get a lot of fouls and you're going to get a lot of flops on you, but you can't finesse them. You can't out-finesse them. You got to stick to your guns, and I think the Pacers can play physical. And you saw it last night. As soon as Bosch went out with a twist, the twisted ankle, and, of course, LeBron had a twist of his own and stayed in the game, but as soon as the Heat went to a small lineup, They couldn't really compete. You know, it was just feed Hibbert and feed him down low, and they were able to run away with the game. So in my mind, I think the Pacers have a really good shot at pulling off the upset.
Yeah, at this point, I think you got to give them a lot of chance here to win this series. I mean, obviously, they could have won game one. Now, a lot of people are saying they should have won that game, but they really, I mean, it took a broken play, crazy shot to even send it to overtime. I mean, the Paul George shot was a once-in-a-season type shot. I mean, a broken play just heaves it up. But that being said, they did have, obviously, they had the lead with 2-point-whatever seconds left to go. Still, with all that being said, I think that the Heat are going to win the next two games. I think LeBron is going to wind up taking over. I think LeBron, you know, he's not used to, he plays physical, and most people back down because he's so big. And, the Pacers bowed up and punched him back in the face, you know. And so I think that LeBron, we saw it last year in the Boston series when they were down 3-2 and he came up with that ridiculous game six. I think he's going to have another one of those type moments where he's going to take and say, you know what, enough of this. I'm going to take over this game, drop 35 and 10, you know, crash the boards and then just and take over the next two games. That's how I see it going. I could be wrong, obviously. I was wrong in the fact that I thought it was going to be a sweep after game one, and the Pacers have played just out of their minds, and I think a lot of it has to do with Herbert. I do think that coach is good, even though he got killed for that final play in game one. You know, you can't look at the entire body of work and pick out one decision he made and say that now this guy doesn't know how to coach. So, I don't know. I still think that the Heat are going to come back and win the next two games and win it in six. Your prediction is what, Neil?
I think the Pacers take the 7 and win. I mean, the thing with the Heat is, and you kind of saw it last night, was to your point that LeBron James has to be more physical in the post mid post, right, in the elbow, in that mid range area, because he is so versatile. He can hit the three. He can drive and he can post up. And I feel like once they got LeBron deeper into the, like, around the paint in an elbow area, that he was able to take control and they went on a little run, right? So I think if the Heat are going to remain competitive and really, you know, take care of the series, then yeah, it's going to fall on LeBron and they're going to make better use of him in that range. But you know, honestly, I think that the Heat, you know, if Bosch continues to be bothered, who knows how he bounces back from the tweak. I mean, it didn't look that bad, but, you know, I feel like if Bosch can't respond, then they're going to take advantage of the paint.
Now, let me ask you this. This might sound, I'll ask Tony the same question. This might be sound crazy, but would it be that insane to put LeBron James on Roy Hibbert and then move Birdman over to David West and play it that way? I mean, the guy is a bigger body than what they're using now on Hibbert, I feel like. And so why not? He's going to out-athleticize him and just say, let's put him down in the paint. And I know he's a great perimeter defender for his size, but let the Pacers beat you with shooting. Let's see if Stevenson can really shoot like that, you know, 9 of 15 for another game, because he's not shown the propensity to do that throughout his career, to be a real lights-out shooter. Let them beat you on the outside and put LeBron down in the paint to bang around and put a big body on Hibbert. Is that crazy to even think? It's not something I've heard before, but it's just something I thought of yesterday.
It's not that – I don't think it's that nuts. I mean, we could – it's, you know, we don't really typically think of LeBron in that way, but, I mean, the guy's a big physical dude. And you saw glimpses of it last night when he was on West, being able to front him and prevent him from getting the ball. You know, worth a shot, but I don't know that you want to jump to that just yet, because I don't know the severity of Bosch's injury. I don't think he's going to be that weakened by it, but you can just tell that I think Hibbert's got control of playing under the basket, and if the Heat want a chance, then, you know, it might take shaking it up and putting LeBron on Hibbert and just give it a shot for like a quarter, see how it rolls out. But, yeah, I mean, and for LeBron, it would just add to his legacy, right? Because he's already, you know, he draws comparisons to Jordan and to Kobe, but he's just he's a different player. You know, he's able to play in three different positions, and I think that, you know, it would just add to his legend. So it could be something that he embraces as well.
Yeah, I mean, a better comparison would be to Magic Johnson being able to play all the different positions, and I think that would be something where he goes into the Spoelstra and says, you know what, Hibbert's beating this up, double-doubles the last two games, let me get in there. At least they'll box out, won't give up so many offensive boards, that type of thing, because second chance points have been big for them too. Now, will this layoff for the Spurs help them or hurt them? I mean, I know that they're an older team, so you would think the longer the layoff, the better, rest up and all that, but I mean, any time a team's going to be off for a week, I always worry about that. Is that something for them to – is that going to impact them positively or negatively or not at all, the fact that they're going to be a week without playing?
I mean, a week to me might be a bit much. You know, I don't know that you need a week to – they didn't really have any – as far as I know, they didn't really have any serious injuries that would require a week to bounce back from. So I think a week is a bit too much, and you're going to see them come out and be a little rusty in game one, but – I don't know that that's a series long. It will affect them drop a series. I think that's like, okay, they get off to a bad start in game one and maybe drop that one, but then game two, it's like they're right back in the swing of things. So unless, you know, Pop decides, all right, we're going to have simulated games and with intensity. You know, that's one way to get over the hump, you know, and prevent Russ is to filter in crowd noise and get like a really intense simulated game on the line. You know, obviously not as intense as with the cameras on and with the, you know, high stakes of the finals in the air. But, like, I have a feeling that he's a way to work around that and to simulate something to the effect where, the, you know, they're kept the adrenaline flowing. Week is, yeah, that's a little bit long of a layoff.
It's going to be long, but Pop's the best coach in the league. I don't think there's a question about it. All due respect to Thibodeau and some of the other guys, I think Popovich is the best coach in the league. He's going to have them ready, and these guys have been – I mean, they're notorious for coasting through the regular season at times, so they know when the they of any team in the NBA, they have the ability to turn that switch on, and they're going to be playing – whoever they do play is going to be a team coming off of a very hard-fought series. So whether it's the Heat or the Pacers, they're going to be beat up and worn out because it's going to be a dogfight for the next two or three games, depending on how it goes. And I'd rather be the team that's rested up and battle-tested in the playoffs, rocket on a 12-2 run in the Western Conference, nonetheless. It's pretty crazy. So with that being said, Neil, you got any duty-serious topics for us today? We got about 40 minutes left in the show.
Yeah, it's a little sparse, but we'll see what we got.
So hold on. Tony D has got 70,000 tabs open.
One of them's playing music.
One of them's playing some sort of music.
I can't figure out which one it is.
Somehow, the show runs smoother without our producer. Somebody's talking.
He got it.
All right. Sorry about that, Neil. It's chaos over here in the Narwhal studio. What do you got for you? Got any Do You Serious segments, some day stuff? What?
Have you seen this article from Baseball Prospectus that basically talks about the ball players posing in Playgirl magazine?
I saw something about it.
I saw the headline of it, but it was like 80s players or something, right?
Yeah. And just here's a rundown of the players that have appeared in Playgirl magazine, and I honestly had no idea. I would have thought that at most there was like one or two dudes, and they were like down on their luck, and like, you know, they were like needed the money because of their coke habit. But apparently it's like a pretty extensive who's who of players. I'll go from the top down on the article. George Brett, July 1984.
Did he get a big chew in his mouth? I bet you he did.
He was chewless in this one photo that got up. But they have Phil Garner with possibly the pose of the millennium. Phil's got it going on, and he knows he's got the stash rocking. And Ricky Henderson, I mean, that's kind of a given. I think Ricky's, he probably didn't even need to be asked. He probably requested it.
He's the man of steel.
You got Jerry Remy, who's, obviously the Nesson god in Boston. And, you know, the list goes on and on. But it's pretty risque poses. I mean, most of them are in their shorts or their bathing suit. But then you got guys that are just Steve Stone, August 1985, decided to give a little – I mean, he's totally nude. And, you know, I'm surprised his hangdown's not peeking out. But just some interesting stuff. They got one guy in a tub, I think Steve Yeager. So I mean, but the real question here is not dude, are you serious, but Michael De Palma, would you ever consider posing in Playgirl magazine?
No, I would never. I never would. And now, you know my thoughts about gay marriage, all that. I'm all for it. But you know what Playgirl magazine is really all about. Have you ever seen a girl, ever talked to a girl in your life that's owned Playgirl magazine? The answer is no. So then it begs you the question, this magazine's been out for 30 years. Who's buying that magazine? It's not women. Right? Am I wrong about that? Am I reading too much into it? I've never met a girl that just, you go into their bathroom and they got a stack of Playgirls in there. I don't know that I would feel comfortable. Nothing's any wrong with that, Neil. But I don't feel comfortable. Would you?
I'd give it a shot. You know, I mean, I have a horrific body right now, but I think if my peak, if they gave me like a good, if they were like, we're going to get you in about 6 months, get your act together, I'd probably give it a thought. You're not really...
You can get on there, Neil. I guarantee you we could send an email right now. Co-host of the Tri-State Sports Guys, right? Budding comedic superstar. You can get in there. You're a big enough star to make Playgirl. We can make this happen. We got a six-month window. I'll make it happen. 6 months. You'll be in December issue, brother.
Yeah, I mean, I need to work on some stuff. But I think, if I get in a good enough shape. I mean, I've done enough modeling in my bedroom and in my bathroom. And I've done plenty of photo sessions in those two places to know that if I have the right lighting, it's not looking too bad. So, you know, I think if I just had a little professional help, then maybe we could turn around and get the word out about what I've got to offer.
Exactly. And you know what? I think, you know, we have some friends over at yogajack.com. We might be able to get you a nice male yoga mat and then get you rocking and rolling, Neil.
Yeah, I think, I'm all for it, so.
Well, that's going to happen then. So now that will happen. We're going to get Neil Lynch will be in Playgirl magazine, coming to shelves probably around December 2013. what else you got, brother?
UFC fighter, Waylon Lowe. I'm not a huge UFC guy, but I've never heard of him. He's apparently suing a Philadelphia sex shop, I guess you will, because the quote-unquote prolonging gel he used scarred his junk.
Jesus. Godspeed there, buddy. Hope everything's all right.
It's called Kama Sutra Prolonging Gel / Pleasure Bomb. It's a gently numbing gel for men that heightens and prolongs sensual pleasure. And it's got a cool minty flavor.
Oh,
Jesus. All right. Well, so I think he's got a legitimate lawsuit there. I don't know what happened. What did it burn?
I mean, he's 32 years old. He's used it before without any issue. But
so he can make
fun
of prolonging gel.
He experienced excruciating pain and pressure, which proceeded to swell. In a normal fashion. I mean, you already got some swell going on, so it's according to the lawsuit, catastrophic and permanent damage, but he's only seeking 50 G's.
That's all it costs? 50 G's?
Man.
Guy spills a cup of hot coffee on him, he gets 4 million from McDonald's.
Yeah.
This guy, he's only asking for 50 G's, he's going to say, it's like, what is this, Cosmo Kramer? He's going to settle with his face on a billboard. That's all he'll settle.
Oh, I mean, I'd like to say that I've experimented with a couple of products here and there, and I've never really encountered anything.
It's better.
Neil, oof.
I mean, you get bored when you're not in a relationship and you're single. You try to experiment and you see what will work. You know, what'll help out the game there, and I just want to put it straight out there that I've never suffered anything catastrophic.
Yeah. Don't just say he's going to hang up on you. All you got to do is just recite the roster of the 1986 Mets. That's the only prolonging gel you need. You go through, you see if you can remember some stats, some big games. Oh, next thing you know, you're 20 minutes in, Neil.
You're all set.
So this next story is not sexual by any means, so everyone can tune back in. They can unmute the speakers. Clay Buchholz, I don't know if you guys heard about this. He was scratched from the start against the Phillies because he injured himself sleeping.
I've injured myself sleeping, 100%. Like, what, his neck or something?
His AC joint, and I gotta say, it's not that weird, you know, for anyone who's actually A, slept, and B, played baseball. You know, your arm is a very delicate thing when you play baseball. It's not exactly the most natural motion, so you're bound to, like, it's you're already crushing your tendons and your muscles and your ligaments and what have you in that area, and so when you sleep on it in a certain position, it's gonna get messed up. And he messed up his right AC joint in the collarbone. And I got to say, you know, I haven't played baseball in a fair decent amount of time, but I did this to my shoulder last year. Didn't have insurance, so I had to go to the walk-in. And they said, all right, here's a bunch of Vicodin, and you want to put a hot water bottle on it. And, you know, Mike, you've seen this car. I ended up, overheating the water, basically boiling the water before I put it in the hot water bottle, and then placing it on my shoulder and figuring, oh man, that's a good burn. Not realizing, no, that's not a good burn. I'm physically third degree burning myself, and I now have a scar from it. So you can never be. Can't take these sleeping injuries lightly.
No, you can't. Absolutely not. Thank God for Obamacare. You don't have to go to a walk-in next time. Well, my God, Neil. Yeah, but I can see you getting hurt. And like you said, pitching, throwing a baseball is one of the most unnatural things you could do. And one little thing here and there messes up your shoulder, your elbow. I could see that. I've gotten it. I've woke up and been out for 3 days from a bad sleep. And I don't even do anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not out of doing anything. I don't play sports, but it's just I'm out of everything.
Well, I mean, I'm the last person to be giving you advice, so I don't know that I should be telling you anything about the way
you
should.
Want to take advice from you, Neil. Why can't you give me advice? What do I know?
But do you think that Marshall Henderson, do you remember Marshall Henderson? Do you think that he should be giving out advice?
Oh, Marshall Henderson, our boy over at, where did he play ball at?
I don't know if you've been keeping up with Amanda Bynes, but she's been in some serious heap of trouble lately where she got caught smoking weed, tried to throw the bong out of the window. The cops came to the apartment. She claims that one of the cops slapped her in the downstairs parts. And then she shows up to court in a platinum blonde wig, and she's telling off Rihanna on Twitter. I mean, she's just stage 5 meltdown. So Marshall decides to get involved, and he tweets, where is Amanda Bynes? I need to holler at her, help her get her shiz together.
That's my boy. That's Tony's girl. So Tony is, at the end of the day, probably going to be the voice of reason here. She's about to beat those charges like Rocky.
Oh, she's got no... She
found out it was like a Ciroc bottle or something.
Yeah, it's a wrap. She's beating everything. Smoking joint in the lobby of her condo.
She doesn't care. But she says she doesn't. All she smokes is tobacco.
What's wrong with? I know. I was wondering, like, she the charges she was facing. She gets more trouble for throwing a bong out the window than for the weed.
Oh yeah, 100%. 100%. How much weed did she have? It wasn't enough in a bong. It's not gonna cost you anything.
Come on.
She didn't have anything else. But they don't have any. They don't have anything on her.
Nope.
She's fine. I mean,
clean.
This could not. Her final story could not end well. You know that.
It's not going to end well, and I will be there the whole way it all the way to the end.
This guy, I will tell you this. I was shocked you didn't put an article up there.
It was close. I have to. Wait. There's going to a couple more days go by. There'll be something.
He's going to just give a week-long synopsis, like this week in Amanda Bynes' life. She went after some model also.
Yeah.
Said she was old and ugly, even though she's the same age as Amanda Bynes. She went after Courtney Love. She went after Rihanna.
I love it.
Yeah. And then she retweets all the articles they write about her. I mean, she's a must-follow. She's the best. She's the best that America has to offer on Twitter right now.
Absolutely. I think she's got the wig on because she shaved her entire head.
Yeah, she had just shaved the halftime,
yeah.
But the mugshot, showed her she's bald. I mean, she's got she's got like a mug. She has like a mugshot, but it's kind of cut off when they cut. But shouldn't have any. It shouldn't have hair on either side. Doesn't look like.
Oh really?
Yeah, you gotta look up Amanda Bynes' mugshot. She's not doing that well. She got rid of those crow lines or whatever she said on her face. She's so proud of her plastic surgery, but I don't know. She's a little bit. See how you could kind of see there's not much.
Yeah.
She's got like a little crew cut going on. Oh wow.
I love it. Look at these winking pictures.
Tony loves so much about Amanda Bynes, Neil. Once you said Amanda Bynes, I just was like, oh, this is just
perked up. See? Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got like she looks like she's like 3 months into her military stint. Where they like shaved her, and then she's starting to grow back a little bit. She looks like Eminem right there.
Yeah, she does.
She looks like a young Eminem.
I love every minute of it.
All right.
I'll be there right to the end, Amanda. Don't worry.
Oh, this is great. I'm going to send this around.
You got anything else, Neil?
We'll do one more. You probably heard about the Houston Astros, the snow cone vendor who got fired.
Yes,
I did.
He went to the
bathroom, put the tray of snow cones down, and someone took a photo, reported him, and he got canned. What are your thoughts on that? First of all, who still eats snow cones? And second of all, I mean, did he wash his hands? I feel like it's not that bad. And third of all,
down
fecal matter.
Oh, in the bathroom, you cannot. He put the tray of snow cones down in the bathroom outside the stall.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Here's what I say. I love snow cones, but I'm not getting any snow cone anyway from a vendor that's walking around. I want to see that thing in a clear case, like where I can see what's going on in there. I'm not buying a snow cone from somebody walking around the stands anyway, because I'm assuming there's people spitting in it walking around the stadium. It's horrible. I would never. I mean, that would freak me out. I don't like that game.
Did that guy get fired?
Yeah, he got fired.
He got canned. But here's the thing, there's fecal matter everywhere, and that's what people don't realize. It's like, you know, to me, you know, it just makes you, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I feel like I've been around this earth long enough to know that I've touched way too much dirty stuff in my life, and I'm still standing, and I'm still breathing. So I feel like, you know, it's a little excessive to fire the dude, maybe a slap on the wrist or something like that. But, I mean, let's get serious. You don't even know when you go to the restaurant what's going on back there. You don't even know. They could be putting their all kinds of stuff on your food. I mean, you might as well just live in a plastic bubble the rest of your life.
But it's what you don't know, Neil, that makes it better.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. I just assume that that's not happening. And I'm sure our bodies can fight a lot of things. So none of these things are going to kill you. But I don't want to know about it because that'll keep me up at night. So ignorance is bliss, my man.
Take the blue pill, I guess.
I'm like Joey Pants in The Matrix.
Joey Pants.
You know what I mean?
Joey Pants
in The Matrix. Now, Tony D, you got any say what's, or are we going right in the top 10?
I had some, but I closed them because they were making
We had some, but something we got. That's fine, though, because we only got 22 minutes left.
Let's go.
We got a good top 10. Now, Neil, what I think we should do, last week we went back and forth. I think it took us forever to get through it. I think you're going to go through your top 10. Now, last week we did top 10 music that we're embarrassed of, but it got me thinking of, like, because you started talking about college stuff and, like, songs that we make in college, and it got me thinking, I mean, the 90s doesn't get enough credit for how great rock music was in the 90s, especially when you see what's coming out now. I mean, rock music is dead now. This isn't a rock station in New York City anymore.
Hip-hop is pretty much dead now, too.
Yeah, well, and that's a whole different ballgame, but I agree with you. But rock is completely, there's not even a rock station in New York anymore. A new rock station, so which is kind of embarrassing. We had 92.3 growing up, so we wanted to go through top 10 90s rock bands and judging them just by the music they put out during the 90s. A lot of these bands that made my list spans, you know, several decades, but I'm just judging them by the music they put out during the 90s. So, Neil, I want you to go. You give me your full top 10. We can discuss it as you go through. Then I'll do my top 10 and Tony D will chime in. So go ahead. Go 10 to 1. Go ahead, brother.
10 through 1. All right, so just rapid fire.
Yeah, and, we'll chime in.
All right. Number 10, I got Oasis.
No. Oasis was one I wrote down. They did not make my top 10, but it shows you how great. I mean, they weren't even close to making my top 10, but they're a good band. Tony D pointed at it and He basically laughed out loud when he saw that Oasis was even on my list.
That lead singer just ruins everything for
that's
me.
The, that's the inspiration for Jive Strat from Lost. You know that, right?
Is it real?
Yeah. So that maybe now you think twice about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, I actually do.
Now you like it. I mean, and you all, everybody.
Come on.
You like Oasis, Neil.
Charlie.
I mean, if you knew me sophomore year in high school, I mean, that I'd be, you know, doing my homework. I did my homework, and that Wonderwall would come on, and it was like everything got to shut down for 4 minutes. I got to turn off the lights. I had to close the door. I had to get in my zone. Like, it took over my world. So,
yeah,
I mean, I know they only have, like, two, maybe three good songs in the 90s, but, like, those two songs, I mean, just ruled my world for, like, 2-3 years.
You were an eclectic guy in high school. You were writing raps in your notebook, and you would just break out into Oasis. I mean, I like that. You're very – you have a lot of layers.
Yeah, no, a lot of people say it's schizophrenic, but, yeah, you could say I'm eclectic. Yeah. I'll go with that.
All right. Well, they didn't make my top 10. I have no problem with Oasis making the top 10. I mean, like you said, they were like a shooting star, only a couple albums. They had, you know, a couple good songs, but they definitely made an impact on the world. So what do you got for number 9?
Number 9, I have Soundgarden.
Mm-hmm. I had them as my number 9 as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's sad, though. I mean, I think they could have been like, right up there within the top, you know, 3, to be honest, or even the best. And, you know, I think Chris Cornell's vocals are just amazing, and I think... You know, and you can look at Velvet Revolver when they got together with, not Velvet Revolver, Audioslave.
Audioslave, Rage, yeah.
Everyone was pumped about that because they were like, yes, it's exactly what we've been asking for, and then it just kind of fizzled out. So, if anything, they're the most underachieving 90s band, I guess you could say.
I agree. I don't even think he's just the best rock voice of the 90s. I think he's the best rock and roll singer of all time, just vocally wise. He's the best. I mean, he was in Temple of the Dog with the Pearl Jam guys, too. Don't forget. And he was fantastic. Nobody vocally can touch Chris Cornell. The best there ever was. They're my number 9, too. Who do you got at number 8?
Oh, boy. Number 8, I have... I got Rage.
At 8? Whoa! I got Rage.
Yeah, I got Rage.
Yeah, come on. I can't wait to see you got above that.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't really get to rank them. I just kind of threw down 10, and I'm kind of, like, looking over my my list, and I did not prepare this very well. But and, you know, here's what goes into my thinking, right? When I think about various rock bands of the 90s, right, I mean... I'm kind of excluding the bands that have transcended a period in my mind, right? So I'm thinking about bands like, you know, I didn't include U2, and I didn't include, I don't think I included Radiohead to a certain extent, because it's like...
Radiohead sucks. U2's worse.
Those bands have gone outside of the 90s to kind of transcend a time period. But when I think of, like, 90s rock, you know, these are the bands that I'm coming up with. I mean, say what you will, and you will, but that was my line of thinking.
Keep going. We got a baby break here. Go ahead.
So number 7, I have Smashing Pumpkins.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I can't really argue with that one.
Yeah, I mean it's along the same lines as Oasis. I mean, there was a period there where it was like the radio that all they were playing was Smashing Pumpkins at one CD they had, and you know, it's kind of emo, so it wasn't really rock, but you kind of crossed genres. It had broader appeal because it touched, you know, different sectors of people, and I feel like, you know, it just brought the people together, and you know, it had a little, it could be intense, or it could be laid back. Like, I just feel like they were able to hit on a couple different tones as opposed to just like rocking their faces off and everyone just like headbanging. You know, it kind of gave a different element to rock.
Yeah, that guy goes from 0 to 100 and instantly, and he's, you know, he's all comic, and all of a sudden he's screaming at the top of his lungs. Great.
They were a band I wrote down, and I understand. I just never got into them. I understand how a lot of people loved them. They did very well. I just never got into Smashing Pumpkins. So they were one that I knew was going to make your list. I thought for sure Radiohead was going to make your list, but Smashing Pumpkins is another band that I just never really got into, so I didn't make, but I understand that they made your list. Who else you got?
So the deal with Radiohead, just a really quick aside, was like they didn't enter into my kind of awareness until like late 90s, and I really listened to them heavily in the early 2000s. So to me, it was like I heard their music, but I didn't really get into them until like Kid A. And then Kid A, like, inspired me to go back and learn to listen to the other stuff. So I really didn't, you know, for the 90s, for me, Radiohead was there, and I knew about them, but I didn't really appreciate them until I was outside of 90s. I don't know.
All right, fair enough. I have the same way. I didn't really get into them until later in my college career either. So, but I could see, I'm sure we're going to get, you know, emails saying, well, how the hell did you forget about Radiohead? But, all right, who else you got?
What am I, number 6 now?
Yeah.
And this is, I'm going to sound like an idiot now, but I lost my spot. Freaking A, I should have gone second.
You want me to go? Why don't we pause you at number 6. I'll wrap down my 10 through 1, and we'll get back. We'll see if there's how much overlap it is. Number 10, I had 311. Yeah. 311, okay. I was so into 311 in high school. You know, they had a couple albums that came out earlier in the 90s, but then their self-titled album came out, I think, like junior year. They had Down on it and a couple others, and they put out another album the following year. And then they obviously went back and listened to some of their earlier stuff. 311 was great, and they were one of the first kind of rap-rock combos, and it wasn't like to the extent of like Limp Bizkit type rock, like, you know, real music, but they had that little rapper guy in there. I love 311. Were you a 311 guy in high school or no?
Yeah, but for some reason I don't see them as rock. I know they're considered rock, but I just doesn't feel like rock. I don't know, it feels like it's just chill, like they have here. It's kind of reggae, rap, like funk. I don't know that it's, I don't know, when you say rock, I think more of like, just more of heavy tones and like, it's angsty kind of, 311 was just super chill, and so I didn't really consider them rock, but yeah, I love them, I just didn't think, I don't think rock when I think 311.
Well, I'm just thinking, I mean, they played them on 92.3, the rock station in New York back in the 90s, so, if I would have to classify them in a genre, I'd put them in rock. 9, I had Soundgarden. 8 is where I put Green Day, and I know they probably might not make your list because they do transcend many decades and they're still going now, but you look back at their 90s music, to me that's still the best. And I know they came out with, you know, the big, you know, concept albums, and they're on Broadway now and all that, but the stuff they put out, the punk music they put out, they brought punk back. It's like a different type of punk, like the poppy punk. But they, you know, led the way to, you know, bands like Blink-182, which didn't make my list but were good, and those type of bands. Goldfinger was out in the 90s, and Green Day was great. I don't know if Green Day made your list.
No, because I don't see them as rock, and I know I'm probably overthinking it, but I think of them as more like punk, you know?
Punk rock. Yeah. It's the genre.
Yeah, no, I understand, but, like, you know, we weren't, we said rock, and when you think of rock, you think more of traditional rock, and more of like, I don't know.
All right, well, hey, fair
I
enough.
I guess I've overthought it.
To each his own. Number 7, I have the Foo Fighters. I've seen the Foo Fighters live a couple times. They're unbelievable. And I'm going to tell you this, spoiler alert, I didn't have Nirvana in my top 10. Because I never got, I know Tony's pissed. I never got into Nirvana. I think they're one of the most overrated bands ever.
But,
Tony's playing with my daughter in the studio right now, so he's not on the mic. But But I'll switch with them after I'm done with my top 10. But I think Foo Fighters are just one of the best bands that's ever been around. That's
over
how good.
Nirvana?
Over Nirvana, without a doubt. If you were to tell me I got to be on a deserted island and I got to listen to the greatest hits of Foo Fighters from the 90s or Nirvana, I'll take Foo Fighters 100 times out of 100. I don't know. What do you think? Am I way? I mean, I'm sure. I bet you there's not a person out there listening that agrees with me.
Absolutely.
But I love the Foo Fighters. Everything they do.
Now you're just trying to stir the pot now. I mean, that's insane that you don't have Nirvana in your top 10.
No. Nirvana can't touch the next six bands.
They revolutionized. They created a whole genre, and they revolutionized rock. Like, I don't understand how you don't have that anywhere in the 10. Not even as, as a 10, just to be, to appease the masses.
I wrote them down, but they didn't make it. When I'm going by, these songs came on right now, but I still listen to them. I'd listen to a 311 song, Soundgarden, Green Day, Foo Fighters, all over Nirvana. I know they have this cool place in history and all that.
Man.
I'm taking Foo Fighters over them. Number six, I got Red Hot Chili Peppers, another band that obviously has actually gotten better and better as they've gone on. And they started in the 80s and just kept, rising ever since. But the songs they put out, and really it has to do with, you could look at how good their albums are to whether John Frusciante is in there playing guitar or not. Because they had that one pretty bad album that had the Airplane song on it there in 95. But before that, they were great. And then after that, when Frusciante came back in the late 90s, they were fantastic. So another band I've seen live that's just great. They make your list, Red Hot Chili Peppers?
They oversunk it again because I put them in the same class as you put out awesome music in the 80s and they put out awesome music after the 90s. So I feel like to confine them to that decade, I couldn't do it.
They put out during the 90s. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I'm right there with you. I don't know. I oversunk it. I thought, okay, these are the rock bands that kind of define the 90s. And I feel like the Red Hot Chili Peppers falls outside of that because it's their music goes with the 80s, 2000s. They just transcended that decade.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, they started in the 80s. But all right, so number five, then you're definitely not going to have this band on your list. But when you look at, I know this is an 80s band that has continued on, but the albums they put out in the 90s are some of the greatest rock albums of all time. And that's where, number five, I got Metallica. Now, they are an 80s band, but you look at, the 90s when they put out Enter Sandman, Unforgiven, all those songs came out during the 90s. By your criteria, they're not a band of the 90s because they were kind of already old by the 90s. But the music they put out in the 90s is, there's not anything out today that can touch Metallica in the 90s. So that's why I still got them at number five. Number four, a band that you probably don't have because you might not classify them as rock. To me, one of the best bands, period, of all time is Sublime.
Oh, yeah.
Sublime is just fantastic. Obviously, short-lived career with the lead singer dying, obviously. But Sublime, could listen to Sublime right now for 2 hours straight,
yep.
And it's fantastic. Either one, Metallica or Sublime, either of those guys make your list or no?
Yeah, Metallica number two because, I didn't listen to them in the 80s, and I feel like I discovered them in the 90s, and they had some of the most powerful songs that you could, that T2 song that was in T2 Judgment Day, dominated our classrooms and, our movie theaters, and so I really caught on to them in the 90s, and Sublime, again, I put them in the same kind of category as 311. I don't see them as rock. I see them as more.
Yeah, they're a little Rage. I could see that. Three is where I put Rage. We already discussed Rage, but to me, one of the best rock bands of all time.
Absolutely.
Period. I could listen to Rage. If I have my playlist on the deserted island, like I said, Rage is going to be heavy on that playlist because I love them. And number two and one, people that know me are going to know who my number one is. But this was actually a harder choice than I thought it was going to be because my number two is that good. And it's not that they're underappreciated. I think Rolling Stone had them as the best heavy metal band of the 90s. And I got Tool at number two. I could listen to Tool for a day straight. Like, that's how many good songs they have. They, you know, the 90s is when they made their bones. They put out fantastic albums. You know, they've only put out, I think, 5 or 6 albums total. But Tool I've seen live probably more than any other band. And live, they sound better than they do when they're in the studio. Are you a Tool fan at all or no? I don't see you as a Tool fan.
Yeah, I mean, I can appreciate Tool, and I could definitely, like, vibe to it, but their videos gave me nightmares, so I kind of, like, you know, it freaked me out a little bit too much. I could probably handle it now, but I was a very sensitive kid, so I gotta, you know, steer clear of that kind of, adult material, but yeah, I appreciate them now, but when I think 90s, I think it's nightmares.
All right, so they they're known as like the Pink Floyd of this generation. They don't make your top 10, but they're a revolutionary band. I don't put Nirvana in there, and I'm an asshole. So I get that. Number one, I got Pearl Jam. No debate on this. Pearl Jam's the best American band of all time. I'll take them over Doors. I'll take them over anybody. They're fantastic. I could listen. I mean, they got their own station on XM, and that's basically all I listen to unless I'm listening to talk radio. They're just unbelievable. I'm assuming Pearl Jam made your top 10. But why don't you break down? I think you left off at number 6. I'm going to let Tony D come over on the mic, critique your top 10. I already hate your top 10, so I don't really need to hear the last thing. So I'm going to let Tony D take over the mic here.
I mean, why even continue? Why even continue?
Let's hear this debacle. What do we got?
This is tough because it's like, you know, I had all these rules in my head, and now I feel like I totally messed up with the rules.
Oh, you're about
so,
to stop.
So, I mean, like, you know, I was considering, a band like Alice in Chains, you know? I was considering them at 6.
Alice
and like,
Chains.
I'm guessing.
Alice in Chains. But, all right.
That was the 90s?
Yeah, Alice in Chains was all mine.
I feel like that was before. All right. Go ahead.
And then, like, 5, Stolen Temple Pilots.
That's a good one. That's not. That's,
I wrote them down.
Yeah. It's an honorable mention for Mike. Tough crowd.
4, I had PJ. 3, I had Nirvana. 2, I had Metallica. And then, number 1, I had Guns N' Roses. I don't know.
Did Mike not
have Guns N' Roses on his list?
November Rain. Civil War.
Listen, me personally, I'm not a Pearl Jam guy. I had honorable mentions, but my number one is Nirvana by far. I mean, it just.
You're a depressing dude.
Come on. Mike says I'm a depressing dude. I don't know. Nirvana was great. I thought. I thought they, you know. They said
so,
trend. They said they.
So Mike didn't have GNR at all.
Well, no, because I think of them as and I think they only put out one album in the 90s.
Yeah, that's
Appetite
definitely.
For Destruction was their big album. That was out in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Because I definitely remember them blasting that when the Bengals were in the Super Bowl. So I think, I mean, and then, you know, they came out with Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, I think. That might have been the 90s, which was good.
R.E.M.
But they didn't make mine. I had them written down, but they didn't make my list. I mean, a couple bands I had written down were Korn, Offspring, if you remember how good the Offspring
was.
For
a couple albums.
They were good. Even Everclear. I had STP written down. Bush, Nine Inch Nails, Blur, and then a bunch of other bands that you mentioned. I mean, the 90s, you could make a list of top 50 bands in the 90s and legitimately put out bands that were good.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Radiohead, U2... Red Hot Chili Peppers, Foo Fighters, I just feel like they're in another class. And, you know, I think if we're like, I don't know, if we're sticking to just bands, when I think 90s, I think of these bands, you know, I'm thinking of the bands that I listed, but, you know, call them crazy.
All right, well, then, if anybody's listening and we miss any bands, hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys. You could tweet us, TriState_sports. Or email us, tristatesportsguys@gmail.com. Always a good list. We can go over, 90s bands forever, in my opinion. But we'll probably try to do another top 10 related next week. 60 seconds left, Neil. One story that broke recently. Everett Golson, quarterback for Notre Dame, kicked out of school for some sort of academic improprieties.
Is that why he's gone?
Yeah, it was something that the school actually kicked him out. He He's not, although some SEC schools have inquired about him, he says he's going to try to re-enroll in the winter and come back for the following season. This guy's just an idiot. He does not have the talent level to play on Sundays. You're getting a free education at Notre Dame, one of the best colleges in all the country, all the world, and you can't get grades up at Notre Dame? That guy's an idiot. I'm done with him. Let Tommy Reese play. What do you think, Neil? 20 seconds.
I think Notre Dame used to be the biggest mistake of their lives.
Notre Dame, the school, did for kicking them out?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what they're about. I don't know. That is what they're about. All right, we're getting quickly in the bonus time. We'll give another 2 minutes. But I don't know. That's what they're about. It's Notre Dame, my man. I mean, Tony D, what do you think?
Hey, I'm not a big college football fan.
None of us are.
So.
We live in the Northeast. We're smart.
How'd you have to...
We like professional sports. If I'm going to watch sports, I want to watch the best of the best.
You're at Notre Dame. You got to
kicked out of school. That's not getting a 1.5.
Do the bare minimum to at least be on the football field.
Exactly. Yeah. This guy's not. I mean, guy's 6 feet tall. He's got speed, but not electric Mike Vick speed. He's not going to play on Sundays. You got the chance to be a very, very good quarterback on a very good storied program, and you can't even get your grades up. This guy is never going to play for Notre Dame again.
No,
because they're going to find somebody else. They always have great recruiting classes. There's going to be some.
Yeah, I mean, it's Notre Dame. There's somebody going
to
come in there.
Somebody's going to come up, and you're never going to hear Everett Golson again.
Yep.
He should try to transfer to some smaller SEC school. You know, one of the non-major SEC schools, and see if he can catch on there. Because he ain't going to play Notre Dame anymore. I'm telling you that right now. They don't put up with that there.
Nope.
See ya.
Nice knowing you, Everett. Thanks for your performance in the national championship game, buddy.
It was great, by the way.
What else you got, Neil? Anything? We're in bonus time. You got anything else, or are you just going to shut down the Hoboken studio after your terrible top 10 list and telling them the Spurs the enemy?
You know, I mean, I'm not a sheep, Mike, if that's what you're trying to say. I like to blaze my own trail. And,
no,
you're
Nirvana, man. They were such trendsetters, man.
I can't get down with my. I don't know what this is about at all.
They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, man. No, Foo Fighters all day, every day.
Man.
Team Spirit.
I'm saying I agree. I like Foo Fighters, but I'm saying they've gone above and beyond what Nirvana was. Because Nirvana will forever be a 90s band because Cobain had to blow his head off. And so Foo Fighters have now gone on and they just keep doing better. So.
It had nothing to do with the lead singer, though.
Come on.
Worthless.
Oh, my. Any guy that could legitimately marry Courtney Love.
This
is a zero.
That was a long time ago.
A zero. You ever see this woman?
Now?
She was a real prize back in 1989.
Oh,
she's a
man.
Mess.
This is
How's Hole? Does Hole make your list?
They were an alternate.
They were.
Oh, Lord.
They were 10A.
I've had enough for tonight.
All right, that's enough for us. All right, so as always, check us out at tristatesportscase.com. We got new content every day. Typically, our sports articles do not get a lot of hits. All of our hits come on Twitter beefs and drug addiction or whatever Tony posts. I don't know. I'm sure he'll post something about Amanda Bynes and it'll get 40,000 hits. In my little articles about the Mets will get 20. That's about right, par for the course. Neil, you don't write any articles anymore, or are you just cashed out from that? You don't do that anymore?
I don't have time to bleed. You know, it's like I got 50 balls in the air.
You sound like you're in bad shape, brother.
I know you're still recovering from the weekend. It's Wednesday night. You don't got time to.
Well, you know,
a 400 word article. What's going on with you? You okay, dude? Am I gonna come out the whole? I'll get the car right now and come out the Hoboken. Me and Tony D. We'll listen to Nirvana the whole way, and he'll tell me how great they are.
That was my Teen Spirit.
I just, I get weird on the weekends, and I'm not near a computer, and then, I got the stand-up thing going on. I had a set last night. I had to prepare for, and I got this job, and. I want to make sure that when I write for the site, it's going to be lights out, and I don't want to put up something half-assed.
Well, all right. Well, why don't you just post your stand-up stuff? We don't even put that on our website. We should put every one of those on there. Those should all be on our website. We're getting a lot of hits. It's amazing. I've been looking at our numbers. We're doing very well.
Yeah, it's not, really, not bad.
Yeah. I mean, it's much better than the Osama days.
Yes. I'll cut up my sets, and I'll only have the sports jokes, and I'll put the sports jokes up, and then people can immediately unsubscribe from our site.
There you go. A little, what's the deal with hockey, huh? And that's it. And that's the whole thing.
What is the deal with hockey?
I don't know. It ain't a sport, brother. All right, Neil. Well, thank you. Keep holding down the Hoboken fort. You always, you know, keep the North Jersey contingency going strong for us. We're in the works of putting together another live show from O'Neill's. We're going to spread the words on the details of that coming up, but we're going to do it nicely with Clicking for Cassie again, put together a nice fundraiser for them. And, yeah, we'll just keep plugging along, Neil, huh?
Yeah, what's the alternative, you know?
That's it. Just keep living. LIVIN, brother. All right. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out every week. Wednesdays at 8. See you next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.